to The Good Stuff with Sonoma County Wine Growers. I'm Virginie Boone alongside Carissa Cruz, President and CEO of The Wine Growers. We are here to talk about what makes Sonoma County such a special place to grow, make, and enjoy wine.
Absolutely. And food and people and everything
music,
great. And music.
And
it is
events.
The summer, right? I mean,
the weather.
It's Memorial Day weekend. This is the official transition to summer. I can pull out my white jeans. I've actually almost pulled them out a couple times, and I'm like, I live by, I guess, growing up in the Midwest, right? Like, you just didn't. I mean, I think there's no rules anymore when it comes to fashion, but
I grew up in California, and that was not a rule.
Yeah, I don't know.
We're a no rules kind of place.
Maybe I was just, my mom was like, don't wear white jeans, maybe, and that was just your way to limit it for a couple of months of the year.
Maybe it was also growing up in San Francisco, where it's always 55 degrees and summer is super cold, so maybe it was wear the white fur.
Maybe, yeah, there you go. Anyway, I like this idea of no rules, and I love that it's summer because it really means, I mean, at least for the harvest season, it's like, okay, we're in it. Now we're going to start seeing grapes ripen and start to get a sense of when actual harvest will start over the next, couple of weeks. We'll have a better understanding of kind of the timing of the season. But really exciting for us because summer means... Which is not exciting to go to D.C. in the summer. There are a lot of great times to go to Washington, D.C., so I'll just put that out there.
It's very hot.
But it does mean our second annual trip to Washington, D.C. that's going to happen at the end of June at the invite of Congressman Thompson. So our Sonoma County Wine Growers goes there to host the Congressional Wine Caucus, which I love, right? There's one of the only bipartisan committees in Congress is about wine. It's the Wine Committee.
As so, it should be.
I feel like wine brings people together, and there's no better place to demonstrate that than Washington, D.C.
Yeah.
That we can have conversations across the aisle. So go wine. But what's really exciting about
go grapes,
is that we are getting to, for the second year, bring our vineyard employees from our Leadership Academy, it's our third annual Leadership Academy this year, to Washington, D.C. I believe none of them, so I think we have 19 out of the 20 so far members signed up of our current Leadership Academy to go, and I believe none of them have been to Washington, D.C. before, and in fact, most of them have not been on an airplane or certainly not flown since they were a young kid. Never flown for business, right? Think about that. I mean, I travel all the time for quote-unquote work, so they're traveling for work, but they're going to get to go out there and, visit the Capitol. Literally a tour, a private tour with Congressman Thompson's staff, but also see all the monuments, just be in the city and meet a lot of members of Congress and tell their story and what it's like to work in agriculture. And we did it last year, and it was just so incredibly meaningful and special for everyone, I think, but especially the employees, and such great feedback from the members of Congress, too, about what a life-changing conversation it was to have the folks that work in ag literally day-to-day in their backyard talking about what they do.
Yeah. I mean, it's such a magical place, Washington, D.C. And
yes,
to have people just feel like they do have a voice is so... I mean, I know it's the name of the Leadership Academy,
but
literally giving them a voice to some of the higher echelons of power.
Yes.
It's pretty significant.
And I think that's what I heard last year over and over again just resonate, was that these very important people felt that our vineyard employees were also very important people in that connection, that they were these people they've seen on TV, on the news, being interviewed, making policy for the world and certainly the U.S. Are there taking time to spend with them. That, I mean, we all know what it's like to have someone cheer us on in our jobs and in our careers. This was like the ultimate of sort of support and just being a champion for what we do here.
Is there anything that you're doing differently this year than last year? Anything that you've decided to
working add? On? We're trying to actually add more individual appointments where they can go in and actually meet with the members of Congress in their office and have that kind of experience of quote unquote walking the halls, as people like to say they do. So we were hearing from some of the members that they were really welcoming and inviting our vineyard employees to come do that. So we're working on schedules because that's always a lot and tricky with a lot of people. But that's our goal, is to add that as sort of a special component to the trip this year. It's going to be awesome.
Okay.
And as I should just say, thank you to Alaska Airlines. They give our Leadership Academy the flights to get to DC. So they call it the gift of flight, which I can't imagine terming it anything better than that. So we always just really appreciate Alaska Airlines for the support of our community.
Yeah, very generous and very important to do that. So, all right, you've got a
big month ahead as we head into more, summer.
More busy stuff ahead.
More busy stuff. All great stuff, though. Okay. And we have a great show ahead, too, since it is the good stuff.
It is the good stuff. We hope to have good shows with good people. And when we come back, we will introduce our guest for today.
Sounds good.
Back on the good stuff, and today we have a winemaking guest.
A special guest, yes.
Yes. So our guest today is Ryan Sepaltas. He is the winemaker for Copan Wines. And welcome. You're also, I think, winemaker and general manager, is that right?
It is true. Thanks okay. for having me.
Yeah, well, welcome.
That's not a small job to do both of those big jobs under one, yeah.
Yeah, plus all the other jobs I give myself.
So. Right, I bet. Right.
Never a dull moment.
Exactly. Well, no. See, never bored. Yep. That's good.
That's the wine business.
Though, yeah, right? That is.
It's easy to make it. Then you got to sell it and you got to do everything else. So.
Yeah, yeah. Well, let's get into that because, I mean, you did not have what we would say is an obvious path into wine. You grew up in Wisconsin, I believe.
It is true.
You know, not a famous wine region. And my understanding is you were a skateboarding addict. Is that the right term? Or just a skateboarding,
sure.
Somebody who really wanted to pursue skateboarding professionally?
Yeah, yeah. So I came out here because at the time, the epicenter of the skate industry, or it still is, I guess, was the Bay Area, San Francisco. And I had a cool aunt that lived in wine country. Mm-hmm. And that was my chance to come sleep on her couch and try to make a go at skateboarding. So I was decent enough to maybe make a go at it. So I thought I'd give it a shot. Thankfully, she lived in Sebastopol. If she lived in Bakersfield, I would be in Bakersfield and my life might be a lot different. But yeah, so really the whole way I got into the industry was I heard you could make some quick cash and a lot of overtime if you were a harvest intern.
Yeah.
And I ended up after coming out here for a summer after finishing college, thought I would just come out for a few months, get established and go back to Wisconsin. But I wanted to stay. So I needed a real job because the old life savings of $400 was long gone by the end of August.
Yeah, it's expensive in Sebastopol.
So talk about, I mean, you're in Wisconsin. So most of the year, because I was born in South Dakota and spent summers and winters in South Dakota, it's not like prime skateboarding season year round. Like there's limited. So how did you get so into skateboarding?
Yeah, so you really have to take advantage of the 4 to 5 months of great weather. But back there in the Midwest, there's a lot of indoor skate parks, so old warehouses that people convert into skate parks.
Yeah.
So you make the best of it. And then you save up your money to try to make a trip out during Christmas vacation to either go to warmer weather. So come out to California, which is that's what I would do. Save up money to come go to San Francisco for a week or something. So, yeah.
Do you still skateboard?
I do. I was out there last night sweating and yeah.
Do you skateboard through the winery? Is what I really want to know.
Sometimes.
I'm having this image of you on a skateboard, like right. Topping barrels and then trying like, yep, it's about ready to bottle.
Doing
back
it, like,
on the skateboard.
Down.
Yeah, back on the skateboard and trucking along. I don't know.
Yeah, once in a while I'll take a scoot through, but it's
like
probably just not a good optics.
Yeah, probably not. Yeah. I don't know.
I'm curious how did sort of the San Francisco Bay Area become such a skateboarding mecca? Like I grew up here and I wasn't totally aware of that. I did skateboard, but not at that level. But I just didn't realize that it, you know, because...
Was attracting people?
Yeah, I mean, not as much. I mean, maybe...
Yeah, so yeah. My generation that came up in the early 90s, so it's kind of twofold. The longest running skateboard magazine, the only magazine that matters, Thrasher Magazine, is based out of San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And so with that, a scene builds around that.
Yeah.
And also at the old Justin Herman Plaza, the Embarcadero, right down there across from where the farmer's market is, that was like the epicenter. People would come from all over the world to skate this famous plaza that was totally illegal, but
that's what makes it just fun.
It built like a huge scene. Like a lot of the famous videos were filmed there. People would come from the East Coast, the Midwest. When I went out there right after high school with some friends, we were meeting people from Spain, people from Australia, people from all over the U.S. that were kind of coming out here just to like see what was happening. And so it just really built upon itself. So you could see like famous skateboarders, you know, sitting right next to you. Yeah.
Interesting.
That's cool.
Where's the best place to skateboard in Sonoma County?
Ooh, Sonoma County could use a couple new skate parks. Over in Napa, St. Helena is probably the best one in the area. But there's plenty. Yeah, at this age, it's all about the skate parks. I'm not climbing fences into, you know, private property like the old days.
No empty pools or anything like that.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah, I'm not trying to get on the news. You know?
Right, right. Especially wearing a Capan shirt.
Yeah,
Maybe just make sure you're not wearing that. So when you were quite serious about it, was there a path to go pro, or was it really still just something you had to do as an amateur?
Yeah, it's kind of an unusual sport or activity where it's you can make a name for yourself, especially these days, numerous avenues. You know, some people really pursue the contest path. You know, now it's in the Olympics, so there's that. It's a whole different thing. But really, it was just like, maybe you won some local contest, maybe you were good enough for a company to send you some free product, and if they saw potential in you, perhaps they would like upgrade you to like their actual amateur team and then go pro. So your goal would be to shoot a lot of video, shoot photos with photographers, and try to get into the magazines. And back then there were video magazines, you know, VHS tapes, if you remember those. These days it's a lot of people get noticed through like Instagram and social media, so it's a lot different than when I was doing it then. But if you really make a name for yourself and you have a style that stands out, companies look to you to endorse their stuff.
Fascinating.
Yeah.
So you end up in Sebastopol with your aunt, your cool aunt.
Yep.
And you're looking for some cash, so you do your first Harvest internship. Where did you do that? How did you find it?
So I, my aunt and uncle invited me to crash a wedding that they were going to.
With or without your skateboard?
Without. And, you know, that night I ended up talking to a guy who ran the cellar at La Crema. And he said, hey, come work Harvest if you want to stay. Like, he's like, it's awful work, but you'll make some good overtime and whatever. And I was like, I just thought it sounded cool to be around wine, you know. Yeah.
All you heard was, you'll make a lot of money working overtime.
Yeah.
Said, I'm in.
I just wanted to, you know, get established out here so I could survive. But it turns out that first Harvest, I just love the process. You know, me not going to school for it, I kind of snuck in the side door where I just started digging out tanks, dragging hoses, learning how to drive a forklift. And, you know, I was always the type that did my papers the night before they were due in college. Ooh. And I like that little fire
that
under
little
you
rush.
During Harvest. So, like, you get one shot to do it right, and it's very time sensitive. And I don't know, the process really excited me first before I actually became really into wine and really excited about, like, you know, exploring the whole world of wine. So that kind of came afterwards as I started meeting other assistant winemakers, younger folks that had tasting groups, getting invited to tasting groups where you're trying to blind taste each other. And it just like all these things started clicking, like, wow, this is really cool. It's more than just making something that can get you intoxicated. It's like, wow, there's wines from different places, taste different and different expression styles, different grapes. Like, it was just really exciting for me. So I just, you know, from there, I really decided, hey, I want to kind of pursue this and kind of see if I can't wiggle my way upward. So
so you wiggled your way to Siduri. That was in the year 2000, so pretty early on. Did you do 1 year at La Crema, one Harvest at La Crema, and then you ended up at Siduri?
So I did a harvest at La Crema, and then I snuck overseas to work at Villa Maria in New Zealand. And then when I came back to the States, I needed a job, and La Crema welcomed me back with open arms. And so I ended up working 3 harvests in a year and a half. And so I kind of built up a little bit of experience. And at the time, I was looking, okay, I thought to myself, I want to take this a little more serious. So I should probably work for a small winery. That way I just knew like I could see all parts of the process and understand things more. So I just put together a resume. I was enlisted with a temp agency that was placing people for harvest. This one, the person from the temp agency said, oh, there's this little place in a warehouse over in Santa Rosa. They make Pinot and stuff. You go interview with these folks. So I walk in, and it's Adam and Diane Lee of Siduri. Mm-hmm. At the time, Siduri was just like totally like going nuts. They were getting such great press. They were kind of the new Jack, making Pinot and making a splash with a lot of single vineyard expressions.
Yeah.
So I walked in and met Adam Lee. He walked me through the cellar. I saw they had all these small open top tanks. I just was like, wow, this is cool. It's in a warehouse. I had no idea. I thought every winery was a castle, a big
right.
facility.
Right. You're like, where I am like, I?
And so the resume looked pretty good because I had 3 harvests in such a short period of time. And like to think a little bit of a Midwest work ethic got me in the door. And they hired me as an intern. And I think within a month, Adam's like, we need you full time. So he offered me like a salary job, like halfway through first harvest. And I ended up doing like 15 or 16 harvests with him.
Wow.
Yeah. What an amazing learning opportunity. Too,
yeah. Because, I mean, especially that was such a crash course in vineyard study because what was cool about Siduri is we made wines from Oregon all the way down to Santa Barbara and all points in between, anywhere where Pinot was, on the rise. So it's cool to say I have 15 years of Oregon fruit experience and also Santa Barbara and also Russian River, Sonoma Coast. So I feel like I just crammed so much into that time at Siduri along with other projects that happened there too. So,
and it's such an important time for Pinot, right? Because, I mean, they were sort of on the early rise of that. And then it really just took off. And a lot of the vineyards that Siduri started working with early on became household names, became very popular with other wineries and winemakers. So you really were at the forefront, I think.
I look back and think I'm so lucky because especially meeting younger people coming up in the industry and that path, it exists still, but I just slid in like, whoa, I'm super lucky to get that much experience. And the cool thing about Adam Lee is he also taught me about distributor babysitting and how to work the market.
Right.
And, it always goes back to you can make it, but you got to sell it. So like really like that whole global approach. And just having that industry inside, like he was such a great mentor for the business as a whole.
Mm-hmm. No, but I do love your story. And even if maybe the times have changed a little bit, but I think we talk a lot about multi-generational families in Sonoma County and certainly around California. And that's how folks, they do it either because they want to carry on the family tradition or they saw it and they loved it growing up. But to be able to sort of find your way into it and then be able to do it and make a career out of it and keep building on success. I mean, I think that's as an important of a story for the DNA of Sonoma County and a lot of wine regions. And it keeps us, I think, really relevant because I think someone like you coming in from another state and fresh perspective and learning by doing is very different than someone that's observed it and maybe has it literally in their DNA. So, I always, when I'm out on the road talking about Sonoma County, I'm like, there's both sides. And I think even custom crush business in Sonoma County allows entrepreneurial winemakers to kind of come in and you can buy a couple tons of grapes from a grower because a lot of our growers just grow grapes and don't make wine. So there's fruit available and you can get on the path to being in the wine business from Wisconsin.
Yeah.
From a skateboarding passion in Wisconsin to, winemaker extraordinaire in Sonoma County.
Yeah. Well, and to see hard work just rewarded, too. I mean, you were just willing to do the job. And Adam and Diana were self-made as well and had really worked hard to get to that point in 2000 and then onwards. So I know we're going to take a break pretty soon, but I do want to talk about, you know, you did at some point launch your own brand as well, Zapaltis Wines. And that was that while you were at Siduri? So you were doing both for a little while.
It was crazy. First of all, it was really silly because I made the first wine in 2004. My first harvest in California was 1998. So within 5 years, I started my label, which is, you know, like you said, anyone can buy fruit, you know, yeah. And I was certainly getting the eye roll early on. I had Zapaltis for 15 years and we put it on ice when I took over at Copan. But that was cool too, because Adam allowed me to incubate, you know, by making my wine at Siduri. The only ground rules he set was, as long as Siduri comes first, you know, I don't care what you do. I think he maybe thought, maybe I would have made 100 cases, found out it's hard to sell it, and then got that out of my system. But, you know, we grew it into quite a thing, and we had the wines distributed all over the U.S. Right. and across the world, and such great placements. So that's kind of why I probably have the GM title at Copan, is because I ran my little lemonade stand of Zapaltis wines. But
okay, well, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about Copan. Back on The Good Stuff with our guest, Ryan Zapaltis, the winemaker for Copan Wines. But when we left, we were talking about, you know, the time that you spent at Siduri, the launch of your own brand for many years called Zapaltis. And then we kind of, you know, we need to get to sort of you coming on to Copan. But before we do that, I mean, Siduri was purchased by Jackson Family, I can't remember the year.
2015.
Okay, so 2015. It really was sort of the first big purchase, I think, by Jackson Family of an existing brand.
Yeah, I think so.
Because they really were, it felt to me before that, they were so much more interested in developing their own brands. But Jackson Family buying Siduri seemed like a really big moment in Pinot.
It was huge. Scary and exciting and...
Yeah,
but it was such a great thing for me, and just Barbara Banky and the family's drive to build like a portfolio where, you know, every category we can be in the top, you know, whatever varietal or genre of wine. So,
mm-hmm. So I have a side note story. So
yeah.
It was on the day that the deal went through. There was a wine event in town at the Hyatt.
Okay.
And I happened to sneak over to the restaurant to grab some food, and Adam and Diana were there, and they had just ordered a really great bottle of wine. I think it was something Bubbles.
Okay.
And I could tell, I was like, there's something going on
like
over there.
Yeah.
And I had no idea. And then like the next morning, the press release broke about the official sale. So I think they were doing this final like kind of celebration moment, like everything's been signed, we're doing this. And I felt like I caught them in this like really crazy moment of just kind of observing like, oh, there they are. Hi,
right.
Rave. And not knowing that this
like,
was like
so
such
happy.
A big deal that this was happening. I mean, it was such a big deal.
Yeah, so. It was a really big deal. And so you stayed on. I mean, Adam also stayed on at Siduri for many years, and certainly with Jackson Family.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about kind of like when did you make the switch over to Copan? Because Copan was later bought by Jackson Family 2017, 2018,
it
somewhere
was
in there.
The following year.
Okay.
2016.
So pretty quick,
right,
then.
Yeah.
Yeah, all right. So... and I'm trying to remember because we would taste together once in a while, you, me, and Adam. And I'm trying to just remember when you went over to Copan. So did you?
So very late 2017,
okay.
I was approached to like, hey, what about Copan? You
right.
interested? And I said, yes. You know, I grew up a fan of Copan wines. My taste and sensibilities really, really, really were aligned with what Wells was doing with Copan. And I was super excited, you know. It was just a great opportunity to kind of simplify my life.
Mm-hmm.
I was, building a family. My second daughter was born, and it was just I needed to have one job, you know, at the
right.
time. I was working Siduri full time. doing Zapaltis, and I was also doing a lot of consulting, so I had like 6 clients at one time.
Wow.
Oh, dear.
And something needed to...
And no sleep.
Right.
And so, yeah, just it came at a wonderful time in my life. And yeah now I get to make the wines that I want to drink and get to carry on that original vision and just keep shining it up and perfecting it every vintage. So
I remember thinking that you were absolutely the perfect fit for Copan, and that it did allow you to sort of, it brought some of your Zapaltis wine sensibility into, you know, a bigger portfolio. Have you brought sort of a lot of what you were doing at Zapaltis into Copan?
A little bit. You know, I think the pitch these days is, you know, a lot of people think of Copan as Pinot and Chardonnay, but I think these days we're more of a stylistic place. So a lot of those same sensibilities within Pinot and Chardonnay, we're expanding to other varietals. So really, like with our wine club selections or what's out in market, we're just trying to have really fun stuff and really embrace different varietals, but done in a lighter framework, in a more nod to the old world, so to speak. You know, but we're very proud to make California wines. We're just very surgical about where we look for vineyards that make sense for what we're trying to do. Mm-hmm. So yeah, Cab Franc, sparkling wine, you know, this white blend we launched a couple vintages ago, like just a lot of exciting stuff.
Yeah.
And so does Copan have any estate vineyards, or are you buying all the grapes? How's that kind of model work?
It's mostly estate. Yeah. I would say about 75% of the volume. But then we still work with some of our legacy growers. So we still work with like Duprat Vineyard up in Anderson Valley, old Chardonnay planted in the early 80s. Same with Brousseau down in Chalon, down in Monterey. Uh-huh. Grenache, Syrah, and Chardonnay from them. And Hawks Butte Vineyard up in Yorkville.
Mm-hmm. But I think, I mean, to me, what changed a lot with you coming on was a lot more Sonoma County wines.
Yes.
So talk about that, because I think certainly like there's the Sea Lift, which I think you make a couple different Sea Lifts. Is that a vineyard, or is that just a name for kind of just, you know, it's coming from a cooler climate site?
Yes. So we have two main sources out there, the Sea Lift and the Tidal Break Vineyard, and they're just near Annapolis, just kind of up above Sea Ranch. It's in the West Sonoma Coast Appalachian, and yeah, that is just the sweet spot for me. You know, I quickly really fell in love with the far Sonoma Coast early on. You know, when Adam would open up old Literai wines or the old Flowers wines or stuff other producers were making from Hirsch, I was like, that's my spot for Pinot. It's like the pomegranate, the brightness, the Pinots, and then the Chardonnays. You really have the opportunity to make a real striking Chardonnay, and the dirt out there is perfect. The sunshine, the weather, it's just, it works. So.
Yeah.
I'm just looking at the wines wondering when I get to try them.
Yeah, okay, well.
Sorry, I was distracted by the wine.
That will happen, I know, that often happens. I see that look in your eyes.
I know, like, you're like, what is she thinking about?
She really wants the wine. So talk a little bit about how people can come visit Copan, what the tasting experience is like, how many wines do they get to try?
Yeah, so we have an amazing experience at the winery. We're up on East Side Road. You can just look us up online, copanwines.com. But yeah, the experience, you know, there's a few different experiences, but what you're mainly going to get is a current flight of what we're featuring. It might be the current wine club, or if we go into summer, we might have something seasonal that's added in there. You can also just go taste the full library flight. We really work hard off our library set up. So always some really cool old bottles open. There's a food pairing option, cheese, charcuterie, small bites, that sort of thing that you can add on. And man, we have the best view.
Where are you actually located?
7800 East Side Road. We're up on a hill and we look across the Russian River Valley, across the river. We can see William Sullivan and Arista. Mm-hmm. If I had a potato gun that could launch that far.
Watch out. Now they'll know it was you.
Sorry, we gave your secret away.
So we do the wave across the way, even though it's a little far. They probably don't see us. But yeah, it's just a beautiful sight up there. And the staff is amazing. Everyone there is a wine geek. So people are fully engaged.
I love it.
It really is one of the prettiest views. I give you that. And my understanding was originally Copan, like that, the area around it had been vineyards owned by Kent Rosenblum. Is that still true, or is it now planted for Copan? Because there's
Yeah, I believe the story goes is that parcel there was split at some point. Okay. I think Kent owned the whole thing. They split that off, and they kept one half, that family. And then we took the other half when that property was purchased. The winery was built in 2009. They were custom crushing in town up until that point. Planted the vineyard there. We right now at the moment, we just have an acre and a half planted. Trousseau, Picpoul, and Pulsard. But
the traditional Sonoma County grapes.
Yeah, very, very Russian.
But those are coming out because they're really in bad shape. But okay. We're taking the plant material to Davis, getting regenerated in the nursery, and we're going to have clean plant material in a few years. In the meantime, those blocks are going back to nature forever. And then we have another part that's more suitable where we're planting Chardonnay and Sauvignon Blanc. So super exciting right now.
Oh, that's really fun.
Yeah, a lot going on.
I know. So again, you can visit you. Do they actually ever get to tour around with you, hang out with you if they come visit?
Yeah, I try to touch tables
once in a while.
Every day.
Once in a while.
And yeah, we do have, you can tour the winery and
that's awesome.
Go behind the curtain.
So Copain Wines, CopainWines.com is how you make an appointment and check it out more. And we're finally going to get to my favorite segment, Virginie, where I get to try the wine.
Okay, well, first we're going to take a quick break and get ready for that.
All right.
We have returned to the good stuff with our guest, Ryan Sepultis, the winemaker and general manager for Copain Wines and former, maybe while still, kick-ass skateboarder. hopefully we don't have to edit that out. Anyway, we're here for our favorite, or shall I say, Carissa's very, very favorite segment, tasting some wine.
I'm now on his mic, so I'm closer to the wine.
I know, she's lurching toward him with her glass. So Ryan, tell us, well, first of all, go ahead and open that beautiful bottle. It's under screw cap.
Thank you.
And tell us, after Carissa gets seated again and takes a couple of sips.
Getting a splash before we get started.
Thank you.
So, in your glass is the 2023 Daybreak White. This is something new we are really focused on launching right now. We did a little bit in 2022 as kind of a see how people like it. And then 23, we kind of bottled enough for a wider release. So,
I love.
I know. It's delicious.
Thank you. Yeah, this is us putting our arms completely around Sonoma County. And I fell in love with white blends early on in my tasting groups. None of us could afford good wine at the time. So a lot of the stuff, I learned my first lesson in blind tasting groups. You don't bring crazy blends
right.
Yeah. When you're trying to study, right? So I would get a lot of grief for bringing these wet Australian white blends or stuff from Portugal or Spain. It was 6, 7, 8 varietals. But I always love, as a winemaker, love blending almost more so than making single vineyard blends, just making Appellation series. So really what happened was with Copain, we have a small press at the winery, and so we get offered a lot of fruit that's this is a ton and a half. We don't have a press small enough. And, Copain sort of become an orphanage for a lot of unusual small blocks.
Wine grape orphanage.
We'll take it.
Small block.
So we started ending up with, old block of Gewürztraminer. Oh, there's a little bit of Viognier over here. Oh, you want to try a couple tons of Chenin Blanc? Hey, we have some Chasselas. So a lot of growers and our vineyard managers would just drop it on our doorstep. And so we started playing and workshopping this about 5 years ago. And this is where we are today. Just using, varietals that maybe couldn't sell on their own. As if you bottled 1,000 cases of a Malvasia Bianca, that might be harder to sell. But we just really wanted to make something that is an eclectic blend with zero rules. The only rules we've imposed upon ourselves is to make something fresh, electric, and just super fun to drink. So it's dry and aromatic, and we just really want to have something for by the glass in restaurants that's just crushable. You know? They do so many terroir-driven wines, or this is like Sonoma County as a whole. Mm-hmm. So Malvasia, Pinot Gris, Chenin Blanc, Gewurz, Viognier, it's all sorts of things. So it's just,
I love that this wine is wrapping your arms around Sonoma County. I'm thinking of that, like visualizing that as I'm drinking. And it's so bright, like, and still lush.
Yeah.
In the mouth,
yeah.
It's delicious.
And I do see this on wine lists, and yeah. I would encourage anybody who sees it on a By the Glass program, try it. Drink it. It's so good.
It's so much fun. It's funny. As I get to this point, I've been in the industry 25 plus years. I'm like almost going back to a simpler approach, like crushable reds, just fun wines. And I still like, of course, I want to drink really cool Barolo too, but it's just kind of fun to like just remember that this is fermented grape juice and you can still make unique wines at a value level. So,
no, it's super important. We talk about that all the time. We talked about that on previous shows, just too, the blends bring in a younger audience, trying something different, being able to have something interesting on a By the Glass program, I think really keeps people in wine, brings people into wine and keeps people in wine. And that's really important for all of us, not just here in Sonoma County, but everywhere.
Yeah, and we just found with wine lists being more eclectic and concise, there's more space for exploration. I mean, a lot of wine bars, you go to San Francisco, you'll see grower champagne alongside natural wine alongside the classics, and it's really cool, and so there's room for everyone.
I totally agree.
I'm just glad that all the orphans find homes.
I know, and they find homes and end up delicious.
And it's great for growers as well because they can keep those grapes in the ground, which
is a really
like
important part of the legacy.
Yeah. Well, this has gone so fast, and there's so many great wines to talk about. But hey, visit copanwines.com. For more information, go visit the Best View on Eastside Road. Thank you, Ryan, for joining us today.
Thank you. It was a great time.
All right, Carissa, we are back to wrap things up on yet another great show, holiday weekend.
I'm still sipping the Daybreak white wine blend. It is so good.
It's interesting because it's the perfect Memorial Day wine.
Well, and it's funny, every time I try it, I'm getting a different, I'm like, oh, is that like a hint of Viognier?
Yeah.
And then I'm like, no, that's really crisp. Is that like a Chenin Blanc in there? Like, I just love, like you said, they should have just called this orphan wine.
The orphanage.
I don't know. Wine. That might not sell as much. That might be weird. No. Sorry. All right. I will. Good job, Copan. You did just great. It's called Daybreak. So
I love it. I love his sense of experimentation. I mean, that's just what makes it. He's always done that with Sepultus. Yeah. It was like, that's why I do think he was just such the perfect fit for Copan to continue that sort of ethos.
Well, and I don't know if you noticed, but I was watching his facial expressions and he lit up when you start talking about this white wine and just getting the chance to, you know, make these small lots and kind of bring them to fruition and play with the blend. And I think that's really fun when you see the winemaker or the grower have this moment where they're just really proud and having fun with the craft.
Right.
Wine's fun.
I wonder how many random bins of grapes he's going to get this next harvest.
I don't know.
Showing up in the middle of the night.
They're all going to... We just offered your address as
he will make them delicious, I have no doubt. So, okay, Tuesday Night Wine. Let's go.
I know. So, coming off the holiday weekend, something I'm also drinking over the weekend, so I'm just going to continue, is loving the San Giacomo Rosé right now. I mean, with the holiday weekend, with the weather warming up, San Giacomo Rosé.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Never can go wrong. Well, I was gonna talk about another Copan wine that we didn't have a chance to talk about with Ryan, but they do another crushable wine.
Yeah.
This one is sort of red. I mean, it's red in color. It's called P2, 21, I think it's the current vintage, but it's half Pinot Noir, half Pinot Gris.
Oh, I love that.
So
I don't think I've tried that, so I'm coming over.
Really good. Yeah.
I'll bring my rosé.
Okay, I'll chill the red.
Oh, I like that. Chill the red.
Okay. P2 must be chilled.
It must be chilled. Well, there you go. That's like a good public service announcement. So I hope everyone out there has a wonderful holiday weekend. Stay safe. Enjoy. Hope you get some wonderful time with family and friends. And remember the reason for the weekend.
And thanks for joining us on the Good Stuff Hour today. From Sonoma County to wherever you are, remember to drink the good stuff.
Cheers to that.